Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Colorado Gardener, read by Christy McGowan. Featuring articles from Colorado Gardener and DenverGardeners.com. Dry Spell by Jane Schellenberger. And this is from Colorado Gardener. I moved to the house where I now live in the spring of 2001. There was a lot of tall, lush Rome grass in the pasture that year. And I learned from my neighbor how to irrigate, to use the few shares of water that came with the place, and feed my horses. There was plenty of ditch water that year, and I had someone cut and bale my own hay. But the following year, everything dried up. We couldn't see any snow on the back range from the plains. Our ditch water didn't come. Weeds emerged in the next few years when it finally did rain. It took years of mowing, on the advice of local farmers, and pulling, and hiring kids to pull them in the pasture, even though they thought I must be crazy, to keep them semi under control. I wouldn't use herbicides. My neighbor did, but he had to reapply again and again each year. My friend Vicky lived around the corner, and we bought a load of hay from a farmer in Kansas who then loaded up Colorado peaches to take home and sell. She knew some willing young Mexican ranch hands who unloaded and stacked all the bales for us, and it became a festive early evening with beers and food afterwards. It took a few years to recover from that super dry spell. The trees that were here when I moved in were some big old honey locusts and a few green ash that provided welcome shade, a couple of small ponderosa pines by the driveway, and a line of junipers on the north side, with one small enough for my daughter's big paint mare to stand over it and scratch her belly, swaying back and forth while the branches flailed around wildly. There was one rosebush out back, and some lilacs along the ditch, too. I mention this because when I listen to the weather now, they say the last time it was this dry was back in 2002-2003. The trees are a lot taller now, and there are more of them. A small mixed fruit orchard and others I've planted. Plus, shrubby western native oaks, Alan Taylor and Jerry Morris dwarf evergreens, clematis, and porcelain berry vines, roses, perennials, cacti, all these wonderful plants that I've discovered over the years while publishing Colorado Gardener that have survived, and a number that haven't. And of course, a big vegetable garden. I've created a diverse habitat, and there are lots of birds and other critters, though few predators anymore. We've had evacuation notices on our street before, most recently when fire jumped Highway 36 to Lyons a few years ago. Whenever the wind howls out here, I'm nervous about my neighbor's huge brush pile, half-dead Russian olives, my own now towering flammable junipers, and the dry grass all around us. There are a lot of knowledgeable plant people in Colorado to help us learn about growing natives, xeric, Colorado adapted, and firewise plants, and about conserving and using less water. And there are conferences and lots of free and paid classes and workshops coming up this spring. So check our calendar. You can search on our articles page to find lots of helpful content. I hear there is a vision for a Firewise botanical garden in Boulder. So, plant lovers, let's be extra careful and extra smart about gardening in this year of the fire horse, but also from now on. We tend to forget in wetter years. Colorado Gardening Calendar for March 2026 by Linda McDonnell, Colorado State University Extension Denver, Master Gardener. And this is from denvergardeners.com. March debuted this week following a precarious start to 2026, including tying for the least snowy February on record, unusually high temperatures, and an increased statewide risk of wildfires. This is typically Denver's wettest month, so here's hoping we'll get some meaningful precipitation. It's safe to say moisture, or the lack of it, may be top of mind for Denver gardeners in the foreseeable future. No surprise, this month's recommendations start with watering. Watering, priority number one. Water during dry periods of 2 to 4 weeks, when temperatures are above 45 degrees in the morning or early afternoon and the ground is not frozen. Prioritize trees, perennials, and shrubs planted last year, including native species. Given current conditions, your entire landscape may be thirsty, including the lawn, which can suffer from spring mite damage following winter drought. For more information, check out Denver Water's recommendations on their website and this Colorado State University publication on winter watering. Vegetables. Start veggies from seed for mid-May planting outdoors. Find excellent seed starting tips on our website. Cool season veggies such as broccoli can be planted soon. If your garden underperformed last season, consider submitting a soil sample to Colorado State University's lab. If you've not started cleaning up, consider waiting until temperatures are consistently above 50 degrees, typically around Mother's Day. This helps insects remain undisturbed in their off-season hiding places. This is a good practice for warm season veggie beds. Mark your calendar for the Denver Master Gardener Annual Plant Sale, May 16th and 17th at Harvard Gulch Park. It's a not-to-be-missed event featuring a wide array of tomatoes, New Mexico chilies, and herbs, along with perennials and annuals. Watch this blog for more information soon. Trees and shrubs. It's an ideal time to prune trees. We have an excellent guide to study before tackling the job yourself. Find tips for pruning and training fruit trees on our website. Consult our website for certified arborists in the Denver area for work on larger trees or projects you'd like help with. Summer and fall blooming shrubs bloom on this year's growth, making this a good time to prune. Don't touch spring bloomers, or you'll lose this year's blooms. Should we get sloppy, wet March snowstorms, remember snow is an insulator, so there's no need to shake it off unless branches are at risk of snapping under the snow's weight. Perennials and annuals. Take stock of what's working and what's not. Consider replacing water hogs with lower water plants, dividing favored overgrown specimens, and relocating or sharing them with others. Nail down your plan of action now, but wait till April or May to tackle the project. Don't worry if some perennials green up before others. Many plants need warmer soil to emerge, or just take longer to break dormancy. I'm always impatient to see perennials return each spring. How about you? Start seeds of perennials and annuals. Wondering if last year's seeds are viable? Look on our website to find out how to test. Note, many natives require winter sowing. I'll confess this one is hard for me, but just like with veggie beds, delaying spring cleanup until nighttime temperatures are consistently above 50 degrees really does provide shelter for insects. Lawns. Schedule a lawn aeration for later this spring to reduce soil compaction and improve both moisture absorption and deep root development. Overseeding after aeration is an effective practice. If you're interested in reducing your traditional lawn, consider applying for Resource Central's Turf Reduction Program. Applications are accepted starting March 9th. You'll find valuable information on do-it-yourself turf removal at the same site. Given climatic shifts, sustainable grass options are definitely worth exploring and may be the wave of the future. Learn more about Colorado-friendly grass varieties on our website and at coloradonativegrass.org. Don't forget to visit the Colorado State University Extension Yard and Garden website. We have resources for gardeners of all skill levels and interests. Happy start to the growing season! The Groundhog and the Garden Tricksters. A fairy tale of wits, weeds, and wily planting. By Larry Johnson. And this is from Greenprints, February 2026 edition. I've long celebrated Groundhog Day on February 2nd. Not because I rely on a furry rodent to predict the weather, but because it marks the midway point between winter's longest nights and the glorious season of spring planting. However, my enthusiasm for groundhogs has been tested, especially when one particularly bold garden thief made himself at home in my vegetable patch. Now, I don't like to admit this publicly, but in moments of frustration, I have imagined a certain groundhog lying on a platter, an apple tucked into its mouth, like the guest of honor at an old-fashioned feast. But instead of medieval fantasies, I settled for a more diplomatic approach. Natural deterrents, like ageratum and lavender, both rumored to send groundhogs packing. Unfortunately, our uninvited guest had a refined palate and simply dined around the fragrant obstacles. Desperate, we launched the Great Groundhog Relocation Program with an official city-issued live trap. We were determined to outwit our whiskered nemesis, but all we managed was a raccoon, a particularly irate one who preferred garbage can dining over fresh produce. In his frustration, he dragged the trap across the lawn, plowing what could generously be described as a modern art garden design. Meanwhile, our groundhog remained at large, thumbing his nose at our efforts. Our neighbor, who had no garden of his own, took a different view. "I like him," he said. "He eats my dandelions." And so, as if responding to an open invitation, the groundhog packed his bags, metaphorically speaking, and sauntered next door, where he was, at last, appreciated. A groundhog with expensive taste. A few years later, I started a children's garden in a neighborhood near the Mississippi River in Minneapolis. Most of the kids had never planted a garden, and they loved watching our groundhog lumber around like a sleepy landlord, inspecting his property. Their admiration, however, wavered when they realized he wasn't just visiting. He was feasting. We tried various solutions, from fencing to companion planting, but nothing deterred our rotund resident. Inspired by folktales like The Peasant and the Bear and Tops and Bottoms by Janet Stevens, we decided to fight trickery with trickery. And so we created our own story. The Kids and the Greedy Groundhog, a tale of clever gardeners. One spring morning, Tommy and Lisa were planting their garden when the groundhog waddled up and announced, "I want everything you grow." The children, startled by his talking, though not entirely surprised, this was their story after all, quickly recovered. "That doesn't seem fair," Lisa said, crossing her arms. "How about this? We'll take everything that grows underground, and you can have what's on top." The groundhog, perhaps flattered by their lack of protest, muttered, "Oh, I guess that's fine." So, Tommy and Lisa planted radishes, carrots, potatoes, and beets. When harvest time came, they pulled up their beautiful root vegetables and generously offered the groundhog the leaves and stems. Realizing he'd been tricked, the groundhog huffed and grumbled, "Next year, I get what's below, and you get what's on top." Tommy and Lisa grinned. Deal. The next season, they planted corn, tomatoes, and squash. At harvest, they picked every delicious morsel growing above the ground, leaving the groundhog with a feast of roots and vines. Now fuming, the groundhog stomped his paw. "Fine, next year I get everything, above and below." Tommy and Lisa simply nodded, already hatching their next plan. That spring they planted nothing but beans. The vines flourished all summer, producing an endless bounty. But by harvest time, the plants had stopped bearing, and the children posted a sign. "Haven't touched the garden since we left for the family cabin weeks ago. Help yourself." Realizing he'd been outwitted yet again, the groundhog threw up his paws. "I give up." And from that day forward, he never touched Tommy and Lisa's garden again. Moral of the story? Sometimes when nature doesn't cooperate, a little creative thinking goes a long way. The Surprise Potato. A Small Harvest, a Big Lesson. By Fiona M. Jones. And this is from Green Prints, February 2026 edition. He opened his chubby fist and showed me what he had found. A tiny, grubby potato, no bigger than a cherry. I smiled and told him what it was, promising to cook it just for him. Normally, he turned up his nose at potatoes, but when dinner time arrived and that same boiled potato appeared on his plate, he ate it without hesitation. We hadn't even been growing potatoes. The little plant that sprouted that year must have been a survivor from two seasons past, left behind by the previous owners of the house. But wild potatoes weren't part of our plans. Our garden was filled with tomatoes, herbs, sunflowers, and soft fruits. My children grew so accustomed to eating homegrown food that one of them once got reprimanded at school for picking and eating blackberries from the edge of the school field. According to the teacher, That wasn't real food. Real food, they insisted, came from the supermarket, wrapped in plastic, and already past its prime. We never saved much money growing our own fruits and vegetables. Our garden was small, and our gardening skills, smaller. But the rewards came in other ways. Fresh air, family time, and the invaluable lesson that food doesn't just appear on store shelves. My children eagerly ate whatever they had helped grow, even when it was suspiciously healthy. The pride of bringing in something from the soil to the kitchen was usually enough to overcome any fussiness at the dinner table. Years later, my eldest son joined a community gardening group at his church. One evening, he walked through the door with a grin, holding out his latest harvest. A big bucket of potatoes, all shapes and sizes, each one a little miracle of the earth. They were larger than cherries, fresher than anything from a store, and tastier than I ever imagined potatoes could be. Dancing with marigolds, how flowers, vegetables, and second chances led to a life in bloom, by Larry Johnson. And this is from Greenprint's February 2026 edition. I have a t-shirt that reads, "This is the dawning of the age of asparagus." It always gets a few chuckles, but I wish I had one that said, "Dancing with marigolds." For me, marigolds are guardians of the garden, bright and unpretentious, protecting every patch of vegetables, even my beloved asparagus. Growing asparagus has been a near constant in my life, reaching back to childhood when I cut fresh spears in my grandparents' garden. Asparagus was my first garden job, and I even worked an asparagus field near where the Mall of America stands today. Then came the Vietnam War, a quick marriage, and a call to serve. My young bride and I struggled on my return, mostly for practical reasons. I took comfort in the garden, growing food that kept us healthy and stretched our budget. But my wife despised gardening, seeing it as another drain on our finances. The only flowers I planted back then were marigolds, lining the garden's edge like quiet soldiers, warding off pests. Sadly, they couldn't save the marriage, and the year it ended, my asparagus patch withered. I took it as a sign, the end of one chapter, and the hesitant beginning of another. I didn't know then that life's colors would bloom again. A few months later, while recuperating from a health scare, a friend named Elaine brought me a single rose. That simple act struck a chord. A rose. No one had ever brought me anything so beautiful just because. I'd never had much use for flowers. They were too frivolous. But Elaine, with her love of dance and her grounding in psychology, taught me something new. Perhaps my aversion to flowers stemmed from a long-forgotten childhood nightmare, where flowers chased me, trying to tell me something I hadn't understood. Elaine and I eventually married, and I chose marigolds to be engraved on our wedding rings, a nod to my past and an embrace of the new growth. She even helped me see marigolds in a new light, not just as pragmatic protectors, but as cheerful companions in our garden. And over time, I found I didn't just enjoy gardening with her, I was learning to dance, both in the garden and in life. Together, we grew flowers and vegetables, taking delight in both beauty and practicality. Now we garden side by side, sowing laughter and memories. I've come to see that flowers like marigolds and roses are more than decoration. They're symbols of resilience, hope, and, yes, a bit of dancing. Thank you for joining us for Colorado Gardener. My name is Christy McGowan.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.